Welcome everyone to the post round 24 edition, pre-finals edition of the Bombercast for 2024. I'm one of your regular co-hosts, the Grizz, and here with me is Bonser 34. Now, Bonser, it's pretty flat into the year, but about as oblique and obscure and incognito into a season as we probably deserve, to be honest, against the Lions on Saturday night.
It's pretty rough to call it a pre-finals podcast for all Bombers fans out there, but they don't actually know what finals looks like, really, do they?
No. Well, our wonderful
producer. A bit of a troll from you straight up just to get the ball rolling?
Well, yeah, I know. Well, our magnificent producer, Beery, used to always ask whether we're post or pre around for the podcast name, so I thought I'd go pre-finals, make no confusion. But, yes, alas, no finals again for the Bombers this year after another fade out in the second half of the year was, I suppose, capitalised by a pretty dull loss, to be honest, to the Lions. It was a 20-point game, but I think, you know, they had 32 scoring shots to our 17, basically doubled us in that area and probably outplayed us in most areas. We'll probably just like how they kicked 11-21, but pretty flat end to a pretty flat year, I would have thought.
Yeah, it was. I mean, look, there's probably not too much you could take away from the game that we haven't sort of talked about previously. You know, Zach Merritt was awesome. Langford finally found some form again, albeit a bit late. Did manage to win one of our regulars a slab bet for kicking more goals than Fritsch, so that was nice for them. But other than that, yeah, pretty all-round average end to it. What, on paper, is probably a season I think we all thought we'd have, Grizz.
Yeah, look, I said at the start of the year and mid this year that I had us down for 9 wins pre-round one. I thought that was about par, considering we had about 11 wins last year. I thought we'd go backwards. So if you were to look at it, you know, pre-season predictions, we've had a decent year, but I think contextually you have to look at where we were. We're 8-3-1 at our bye, or 8-4-1. I can't remember exactly which one it was. And to finish 11-11-1 with a percentage of under 100, it's about as mediocre as you can get, to be honest. And I don't know whether we got ahead of ourselves or whether we just got found out by the competition in the way we played. I think our possession kick mark game over the course of the year, certainly against Brisbane, well, got shown. I like to talk about the mechanics of the games after, you know, in our podcast, but there's really just no point on the weekend. It was a pretty dull affair, and outside of Zach Merritt, rather unremarkable.
Fourth lowest percentage. So outside the bottom three, who all had about that 60%, we were the worst. So, you know, I asked the question of a few people prior to the game that if we got beaten by enough to throw our percentage below last year, would we say we've improved? And the answer was, no, we're not sure. I think you're right in saying that whilst we probably all would have taken this at the start of the year, you do need to look at it contextually. So I had a discussion with a Hawthorn Premiership player probably about 4 weeks ago now, and he actually won, despite the fact they win flags for fun, he actually only ever got one flag, so he's a bit of a journeyman footballer. And he said to me that, you know, it's all well and good to be happy with reaching what we'd set at the start of the year, but the reality was these things are so damn hard to win that you need a lot to go right. You don't need everything to go right. You never get a season where everything goes right. You know, you look at, I mean, the Bulldogs in 2016, you know, Bob Murphy went down. You look at, you know, the Collingwood last year when McStay went down right before the pointy end of the season, or, you know, Richmond lost Alex. You know, not everything goes right, but you need a lot to go right. And for us this year, a lot went right, I thought. I thought a lot went right, and we still just did not capitalise at all.
Yeah, and I think the percentage of 93, we conceded, I think, the fourth most points in the competition behind the bottom three teams, who were absolutely pumped from week to week. One of four teams to concede 2,000 points, 2,024 exactly, which is sort of ironic. The only other three teams to concede more than 2,000 points this year are West Coast, North Melbourne and Richmond. So you just look at that and you get fifth least points scored. So we had a couple of fluky wins in there by a small margin. We have a draw. The reality is if we don't draw against Collingwood, we're actually a bottom five team, which probably sounds about right. And so in terms of the mid-season downturn. I look at so many games where we could have won if we had played smarter, done better, like the two Gold Coast losses, the loss against Adelaide, the game against Melbourne, where it was right there for the taking. They were missing so many players and we coughed that up and just got beaten in the wet. Like those are the games like where I look at it and go, okay, if we were a fair dinkum final side, we win at least two of those games.
It's a little bit of the old, if my auntie had balls, she'd be my uncle type
No,
thing, isn't it, really?
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, we didn't win those games because we weren't good enough. And so for me, the wasted opportunity is if we were good enough, it was there for the taking. The fact that we didn't shows where we're at, if that makes sense. I think we fluked a couple wins at, like I said, that draw against Collingwood. There are a couple wins against St Kilda where, at the start of the year when St Kilda, missed everything they could possibly miss in the third quarter and let us back into it. Anytime we came up against a really good team, we got absolutely pumped. We got beaten by Sydney twice, got pumped by Port Adelaide, got pumped by Geelong in the second quarter, got beaten by Brisbane. GWS, we somehow won that one, so that's probably the exception. But otherwise, the teams that are likely to be there at the pointy end belted us. And I don't know. I look at this and I go, well, we're probably where we're at. In fact, I actually think, that draw probably hurt us in that, I know we were saying we don't want to tank for draft picks, but at this point, would you rather be pick five or pick eight based on a draw that doesn't mean anything in the long run? But that's all revisionist. So I think you and I were both championing go for the finals when you could. It's a shame we weren't good enough to go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I said at the time, and I stand by it, that the difference between, say, pick five and pick 10 is probably not that big for me. So I probably still don't care about that so much because, and in a draft like this, which I believe, and no doubt I'll be corrected if I'm wrong, is pretty even after sort of you get outside that top three.
It's sorry, it's
I'm
still.
probably not losing too much sleep over it, but you're right. In the end, the draw probably just gave us a little bit of a cushion above where we probably should have been at.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think this year's a bit different. Sorry to cut. I didn't mean to cut you off. Was with the Kako bid. There's rumors he might be going pretty high, so you want to get in before that bid. But all that to say, it's all for moot now.
But
Yeah.
last week, Kippen, last week. So look, let's be honest. We'll move on from the game
Yeah. Well,
on
it's
Saturday
not
night.
worth revealing. It's not worth.
So Kip and I last week talked. We talked forward line and what's going to happen, in the off season. We had some bit of a chat. I want to move to the other end of the ground and ask you what happens this off season with our back line. So we accept obviously that Ben McKay is still the linchpin that we build around. My question to you now is Jade, does Jaden Laverde stay as a starter? That do we keep all our eggs in the Zach Reid basket, which we seem to do despite the fact his body's made of tissue paper. Kane Baldwin's now gone. We'll touch on delistings a little bit later. Heppel's obviously retired. Does Martin, for the love of God, get back out of there? Because if he goes back out, it gives Redmond that attacking role, which he's clearly missed this year. But then who plays lockdown defense? Does McGrath, do we take the ball out of McGrath's hands and tell him to not worry about attacking anymore? Don't worry about getting the pill. Just lock down a small. Like, it's one of the most bizarre setups we're going to have because there's just no straightforward answer. It's very different. So the forward line, we looked at that, Kip and I went, look, we've got too many talls. We can't go to that many talls. Let's get rid of one of them. I look at the back line and go, I have no idea what our mix looks like. I don't know what our perfect mix looks like.
There's a few things here. The first thing I'll say off the bat is I don't care what our defensive setup is. If we don't find a way to defend better up the ground as the team will put pressure on the ball as it comes in, we could have the All-Australian back line from this season down there. It's not going to make a difference. And I think that's a major reason we conceded so many points was that we were just getting absolutely crucified on counter-attack for what seems to be the 1,000th year in a row. But that aside, my view, so I would argue that I'm not even sure Ben McKay is our linchpin. I think he's definitely going to be there at fullback because that's what we've recruited him to do. He's in his prime. We're paying him a lot of money. I don't think he's the guy you build your defense around. What I think we have not identified are defenders that can lock down specifically and play Dower roles. We have a lot of intercepting types. Our only lockdown player is Jake Kelly, which means he's
We don't play him in that role though at all. We push him up the ground and try and get him to deliver the ball inside 50.
Well, no, I think he follows the most dangerous players up there. And because we play such a high press, you basically play two players behind the ball. And that's generally always Ben McKay and Andy McGrath. Ben McKay there for intercept Andy McGrath because he's fast enough to get back goal side if someone gets out. But we play such a high press. And we play such a high press because we don't have players that can beat their forwards one-on-one. So we have to play this aggressive intercept style because McKay and Ridley and Redman and Heppel when he was playing and Laverty aren't one-on-one lockdown players. They're interceptors. For all of Jaden Laverty's, you know, issues this year locking down one-on-one, he took some pretty good intercepts all year. And because that's what he does. He reads the ball well in flight. But when all you have is interceptors, that means you have to play this really aggressive high press. And it means that if you're not putting pressure on the ball coming back, then you just get crucified. And so we need to rebalance our defense with some more lockdown players. I don't know if that's Jake Kelly. I know for certain if we need Nick Martin out of there. Not because I don't think Nick Martin is a good player, but he's just wasted as the back pocket, as you mentioned. I think Archie Roberts needs to play if he's fit round one next year. I think we need to recruit at least two defenders this offseason because you were mentioning, you know, Jaden Laverty, you know, was showing signs of aging and Zach Reed's made of tissue paper. You know, Lewis Hayes could have been played at multiple times this year and he didn't get picked. So there's clearly something there that needs to develop. I'm not saying it's not going to come along, but it's clearly a way off. Sam Wiedemann, we don't know where we don't have no idea whether he's on the list next year. So also, our defensive stocks are really bare. I think we need at least two AFL-ready defenders this year, this off-season, and I wouldn't be against drafting a halfback with our first-round pick if required. But I suppose to talk structurally about our back line, I think we play one genuine tall in McKay and a whole bunch of pseudo-talls in Ridley and Laverty and Kelly and Heppel, who are all, you know, I would like to see at least one more genuine key defender, whether that be Reed, Hayes, or insert recruit. I think we need another couple of.
So who's the recruit? If you had to pick one, who would you be recruiting?
Well, I don't know why we're not going after Josh Battle, for example. The Hawks have just seemingly gone uncontested.
Is he a lockdown though? Is he more? He to me seems more like the intercept type we've already got.
He's upmarket Laverty, I suppose, in a way. I don't know. Like Lewis Melikan's always available at Sydney. He's a pretty good defender. There's, you know, Dougal Howard was available last offseason. Maybe he shakes that tree again. He's a decent lockdown defender. You don't want him intercepting, but he's a decent lockdown defender. You know, Sam Day maybe from the Gold Coast, but he's just as injury prone as Zach Reed. Like, there's not a lot of options, which is why I'm surprised we got rid of Caden Baldwin so quickly.
His body's made of tissue paper, I reckon. Yeah. Look, to be honest, I think Zach Reed's probably lucky that he was pick 8 and not pick 88.
Yeah, well, that's a given, but I sort of wonder if we're going to give Sam Wiedemann another year, maybe on the rookie list or something, just because there is that dearth of key defenders. Look, we are putting our eggs in the Zach Reed basket, and if not Zach Reed, Lewis Hayes. Maybe Lewis Hayes is an extra off-season to ready to go physically, but I think we need two genuine key defenders. We need Ridley. And then we need smalls. We can't keep playing three or four of these tall, not overly mobile intercept types, for mine at least.
We need Mark Bagley back.
Prime Mark Bagley?
Or dare I say Henry Slattery?
Prime Mark Slattery, Henry Slattery or Mark Bagley are taking a heartbeat to play defence at the moment. That's exactly the type of player we need.
Yeah, and the thing is, I actually have no idea who you go and get because you're right, we need another tall. But the problem is, any other tall from another club is going to look at the fact that we've got Zach Reed, Lewis Hayes and whoever else in front of them and go, well, am I actually going to get a game? And the answer is, well, maybe we're not sure. It just depends on how Zach's body's holding up. So, you know, it's a tough one because we've turned so many players into makeshift defenders. It's like we've forgotten to actually get key players whose whole junior career was built on defense. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Jaden Laverde was obviously, he was recruited as a forward and then we got told he could play mid, his body broke down, went back. McGrath, we recruited as a mid, hasn't worked, went back. Heppel obviously was not a defender, has had to play defender this year. We're the kings of makeshift defense, and at some point that we've got to stop doing that. I just don't know if it'll be this off season, but let's talk the listing. So we've had what, three, four already? We've had four already. Jaden Hunt obviously went very early, and then we've had Nick Hind, Tex Wanganeen, and as we've mentioned, Kane Baldwin gone. Probably Tex the only one that really surprised me. I thought maybe based on the fact that, as you said, we need these genuine small defenders, that maybe he'd get another year in the back line. But I guess again, he would have just been another makeshift defender, wouldn't he?
Well, the thing about Wanganeen is I'm not sure he's the type of defender we need. Like, he's a running sort of distributing type halfback, not a lockdown defender. And we've already got, Redmond, maybe McGrath, going to play him on that role. We need a lockdown type. I know we were really interested in Ben Paton a while ago from St Kilda. I think he's out of contract. Maybe we go for him. But yeah, I don't know. This is not available. And so that's probably why Wanganeen went, because we've got enough of that type. We need to start rebalancing our list. And, Kane Baldwin is made of tissue paper, like you said. And that sounds very rough, but it's probably correct in a lot of ways. And yeah, no real surprises with any of those for me. What about you?
No, well, yeah, look, I thought Tex, as I said, I think Tex would have got another year, but maybe it's a sign that the nepotism of Essendon is wearing out, and we're not just going to keep giving players years and years and years because their name is a famous Essendon name. But it does mean, though, the fun thing about this means that we're now, what? So we've got those four gone. You then have Heppel gone as well. That makes five. That's a lot of changes for a club already that's only got two draft picks, because that's all we have at the moment. Because remember, we traded our future away to get hold of Caddy last year.
Yeah.
But I look at the list and I go, well, Baldwin, sorry, Wiedemann's out of contract, so does he get another go? Not sure. Jake Kelly's out of contract. He probably gets one through default, much to the chagrin of, well, the chagrin of a lot of Essendon fans. Is there anyone else you're looking at that's out of contract that you're going, well, maybe they don't get another crack?
Well, Sam Wiedemann's the one that sticks out for mine. Again, now he might be spared for what the reasons we mentioned earlier, that we haven't got a lot of key defensive depth at the moment. I do wonder, this is maybe a podcast for another day, whether Harry Jones goes down into defence, perhaps.
Oh, don't,
But
don't.
I know that was probably going to set you off, so maybe not talking about that. Look, Todd Goldstein's contracted for next year. Be interesting to see whether his body's up for going around again. The interesting one I want to talk, so Mac Wealthy's out of contract. If he wants to stay at the club, I don't see why we wouldn't re-sign him, considering he's probably our best small forward at the moment in terms of all-round defensive efforts and goal scoring ability. But the one I wanted to talk to you about maybe was Will Setterfield. Now, if Dylan Scheel moves on this season, then maybe the club hold on to Will Setterfield. But when all the midfielders are fit towards the back end of the year, and Will Setterfield's racking up 40 disposals and 10 clearances and 8 tackles in the VFL, he couldn't break in. Yeah, he has had issues with his body. Do you reckon Will Setterfield, if it is going to be a hard cut of the list, do you think maybe Will Setterfield might be one of those guys that, might get a run on a rookie list with us if we have the list spots, but otherwise might be a hard cut?
Absolutely. And that, to be honest, that's probably a little bit different of the Essendon of old, because we probably would have just kept him around going, we need depth. But yeah, he does, his body, I think, is against him. So I think Eith has actually said it 1,000 times that, he's a good player, fits our needs, but his body just doesn't hold up. And he did put a good together a good stretch in the back end, couldn't get a game. So you're right, it does look like someone like him might go. But that just adds more to the mix, doesn't it? Where you start talking that like seven, eight, nine players cut off the list, and Brad Scott did sound like he was going for a deep cut this offseason. And as I said, we've got two draft picks at the moment. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this all unfolds. Especially since the only thing we seem to have currency of is at the moment there's this talk of Draper going, and but that would only give us another draft pick. So we'd just be replacing him.
Next question is that such a bad thing? So we had to cull. So we got Saad El-Harawy has taken basically Jaden Hunter's full-time spot on the rookie list, considering we We drafted him in the mid-season draft and Hunter did his ACL. I think that Will Satterfield might get a year on the rookie list just because having an experienced option in the VFL is helpful, an experienced backup. I do expect to lose. So this now turns into, and we'll probably have a different podcast on this, is possible contracted players to get moved on. The other one that we haven't even talked about is Jake Stringer, whose contract is currently up in the air. Who
Has
knows?
qualified for a contract, though. I would be confident he gets another contract from us,
But
would be my take.
can I, but, okay. Have
But
I,
why? Great question.
yeah, well, I didn't want to say it so bluntly, but essentially, yeah. So from both parties, right? If you're, so Jaden Davies, the other one out of contract, we could talk about in a second, but Jake Stringer, he's the cream on top of the cake. When are we close to having the cake? Wouldn't he just be like, if you're Carlton and you're saying, well, we haven't got our forward set up right with the two rucks with Tom De Koning. I know there are going to be Essendon fans listening to this podcast throwing things at their phone or throwing their phone in the river as they talk about, as we talk about Jake Stringer playing for Carlton. But, if I'm Carlton, okay, Mackay, Curnow, Tom De Koning in the ruck, and then Jake Stringer is my third forward. That's a nightmare. You think about Melbourne, like Christian Petrarca, questions about whether he's going to be able to roll through the midfield as much as he wants. Maybe you have a tandem of the Stringer and Petrarca through the midfield forward. Like if you're Collingwood, who are always looking to boost their forward line, like if you're one of these teams that are looking for that looks like they want to try and compete and you're looking for that extra 5% or that guy that can kick you five in a prelim final, why wouldn't you be interested in Jake? And if you're Jake, why do you want to be at Essendon? Brad Scott, you've had a revolving door of coaches and the club seems to constantly be in mediocrity. Like, why not go and challenge for a premiership? Like, I don't see why for either party this works.
Well, for Jake chasing a premiership, I guess the answer is he's already got one. So does he need to chase one? I don't know. From an Essendon point of view, he obviously had his best season goals wise for us this year when he kicked 42, which is better than his previous best. And it's actually his second highest in his career. So there's some value to him from an Essendon point of view in terms of getting rid of him. You're not going to get the top five pick like Jason McCartney said he was worth all those many years ago. But we'd probably still get a decent enough pick for him. So yeah, it's a tough one from an Essendon point of view because he was probably our most lethal forward alongside Kyle Langford. But is that a problem? Because we've discussed before that it's a very slow forward line. But there is someone though, Grizz, before we
So,
run out of time
yeah, go ahead.
that I do want to touch on that's not Essendon related. Well, it is Essendon related to a degree. What's your thoughts on Christian Petrarca? So that has reared its head on our board this week. Let's go get Christian Petrarca. What are your thoughts?
It would be absurd if I can just put it that way. So again, when you're talking about teams that are going to go after Christian Petrarca, are likely going for Christian Petrarca because they want to compete for a premiership. Like Richmond's going to have 1,000 first round picks this year. I guarantee you they're not after Christian Petrarca because where they're at in their life cycle doesn't necessitate having someone like him. And for us, we need to invest. We've got very little draft picks as it is. We need to invest, wisely in draft picks and in salary cap, giving, what will have to be for us, two first round draft picks plus a very, very, very good player. Like I'm talking, Sam Durham type level player for one guy, Christian Petrarca, coming off the injuries coming off would just be madness. It'd be right on brand for us, but it would be madness.
So I asked the Brains Trust, that is this Supercoach Discord chat, that which is of course the board's Supercoach Keeper League, which is a fairly shut Discord because we haven't had any new members for a while. But I asked that question today. The best answer I got, and shout out to Murk, who wrote me a massively long paragraph, but I'm not reading them because I didn't agree with anything he said, was Miller Nista, who said the club is boring. Bringing in Traka at least makes us interesting. Let's just trade everything. And that's probably the best answer you're going to get. That's the most logical reason for doing it. There is no other reason for the Essendon Football Club to go and get Christian Petrarca unless you believe we are close to a premiership. And anybody who has watched us this year and thinks we're close to a premiership, I have got a lovely bridge in Sydney that I would love to sell you. There is just no way you could possibly think the shit that we put out in this second half has us anywhere near a flag. You know, they talk about, oh, we beat the reigning premiers, we drew the reigning premiers. Guess what? They didn't make the fucking finals either. So you
Yeah.
hang your hat on beating a side that was rubbish this year. So yeah, that's me for Petrarca. I did say to Beery that a half an hour wasn't long enough for me to rant about it, so I won't go on any further. But yeah, let's just put that shit to bed right now and say that Christian Petrarca is not what Essendon needs at this point in time.
No, and I wouldn't like those two first round picks for one player trades are what you do when you're on the cusp of a premiership, not when you're trying to figure out where you're at as a club. Well, that might wrap us up. I'd ask you for a tip and a bold prediction, but obviously, mercifully, there's no more games left this year. For those,
I think
will
Port win the flag. That's my tip. I'll give you a tip. I reckon Port win the flag this year.
I think that. GW, oh, sorry, GW. I think Geelong win it this year. I think they're the sneaky sort of underdog that slid under the radar here.
That was going to be my condition was they win the flag if they beat Geelong this week. If they don't, I think the Cats win it too.
Yeah. So this year, this off season, we'll be doing some podcasts sporadically. We've got a few things planned, especially hopefully next week, but we'll keep that under wraps. But Bond, thanks for jumping on again this week, in sad circumstances, but in mercifully in others.
Yeah, it's all well. It's all done, dusted now, isn't it? So we can give up on the year.
That's it. Now we can move on to where Essendon really thrives, which is the off season. So, as always, make sure you tell your friends to like, subscribe, and listen to the pod. We'll be doing some more pods over the off season, and I suppose go Bombers.